Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
It was December last year when we first actually spoke to Mickey Mickelson about the joys of how life was as a publicist, etc. Obviously, we'd been working with Mickey for a few years before then, but he was such a fantastic individual there. We felt it's only right that he came back onto the program to kind of do a sort of mid-year review. And not only that, he's also brought the fabulous Amy Ravachandrian, who is a co-owner with us to the program as well, or with Mickey, I should say. Mickey, first of all, welcome to the Midweek Drive Author of the Week feature. How are you?
Good, Alex. Thank you so much again for bringing me back. And it's been probably, 4 years we've worked together?
Yeah, almost half a decade in many ways.
Yeah, almost half a decade. So I appreciate
We went through a pandemic together, Mickey. What's that to appreciate?
I know. And you got me interviews every week during the pandemic for 2 years. No glitches. So thank you so much.
That's crazy. The important thing. And would you, I mean, Amy, welcome to the Midweek Drive. Just describe your own position within what I refer to as the Mickelsonverse.
Yeah, it's in his universe for sure. So I actually am co-owner of the literary magazine Top Shelf with Mickey. So that's how I play a role in his ever-expanding universe, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, not that I sort of will go too much in terms of this, but just when Robert J. Sawyer actually writes that Mickey is a super nice guy, very easy to work with. He is tenacious, doesn't sort of give up, continues. Mickey's out there promoting your book forever. It's just wondrous, basically, Mickey. I mean, you know, and Robert's been on the show a couple of times, so great stuff there. We've been joined now by Chloe Rose, an ace singer-songwriter from this side of the Atlantic, because I thought we'd actually sort of balance things up. Chloe Rose, welcome to the production. As you can see, we have Mickey, we have Amy as well, who's the owner of publisher of Top Shelf magazine. Interesting, Amy, Top Shelf has an interesting kind of meaning in terms of Britain, insofar as it's normally the place that more adult magazines are actually located. Was that a deliberate choice?
I don't know, Mickey. I don't know. Mickey asked me to be a part of it. So I'm actually new to Top Shelf and discovering it. But that's a Mickey question for sure. I'm going to throw that to Mickey.
So Alex, I'll jump in if I can and raise a couple of points here. Amy owns Abundantly Social out of Houston, Texas, which is a social media company. She's been featured in Inc. magazine, CIO magazine, and a number of other magazines. With Top Shelf, we actually took it over from the previous owners. So we never labeled or titled the magazine. It was already out there in that aspect. I don't think the owners knew what it meant in England, which is why they labeled it the way they labeled it. But we're going to leverage that as best as we can going forward because, hey, we want to make it international. So, yeah, that's what the deal is.
And we'll continue to do so. And Mickey, we're going to talk about how the year's been so far. But Chloe, any questions you'd like to put to Mickey or Amy at present?
Yes. So, Nikki, I just wanted to ask how it all started, really, because I know your job as well is to get writers, you know, get the like work published and so on and so forth. And I'm just quite interested to know how that journey started for you, really.
I worked in the executive world with a friend who wrote a book, got us some book signings. That was in March of 2016. And word got out about what I was doing from other authors. And by August of the same year, I'd signed 34 authors.
Crikey.
And we now have a repertoire of over 100, 3 New York Times bestsellers, 7 USA Today bestsellers, 6 publishers, actually 7 publishers. And with the help of Amy, one very top one in Houston, Texas, because she referred it. But I also want to premise the fact that we're not only representing authors. Yes, every client that we have is writing books, but we also represent musicians. Actresses.
Wow.
Yeah. We represent Jackie Joyner, who's a top Billboard saxophonist. And he wrote a couple of international science fiction books. So yeah. And then we do things like working with Amy and doing collaborations. So it's been a journey. And Amy's always telling me, we're going to build an empire, Mickey. That's what we're going to do. Well, we're not at the ivory tower yet, but we're in that direction. So, yeah.
Well, certainly Jakeem has been a legend both on Madrid Drive and indeed New York Real Talk with, of course, Pamela Suman, who's one of our other regular New York correspondents and ace musicians. Mickey, you may well not have had a chance to actually have a look at any of Chloe's material I sent you. If not, that's no problem. We could always sort of work our way through that. But were you aware of the kind of magic that Chloe's been producing?
I wasn't. So let's talk about that. And you could tell us about you as well, Chloe, if that's okay.
Oh, bless you. Yeah, no problem. So I'm a singer-songwriter from Lincolnshire. And I started writing seriously probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And I've had like a lot of interest through BBC Introducing. I know like Radio Lincolnshire and Radio Humberside have like championed the music, especially Alex with Siren as well, which has been amazing. And I'm just hoping to just keep going with that and hopefully, you know, make a breakthrough at some point, but it's just so hard to do. I just know I've got something different to give, but you know, you've just got to keep going really and see what happens.
So when are you going to be opening for Paul McCartney? Is that happening anytime soon, or what's the deal?
I wish that would be amazing. Honestly, great idea. Awesome. Maybe one day. Fingers crossed.
We'll have to talk to Sir Paul and make that happen for you. How's that sound?
Yeah.
Being cheeky, sorry Alex,
that would work extremely well. No, absolutely, just go for it. As I say, creative edge, we have to put creatives together, that's the important thing. We're running this piece where it's sandwiched really between what could almost be described as a bit of a summer season of authors and writers. We have Patricia Tolman, of course, best known for her role in Babylon 5, but also an inspirational writer these days. We featured Armin Shimerman coming up very shortly, talking about his favourite episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which, of course, is Far Beyond the Stars. Yesterday, or indeed last week, if you're looking at Siren Radio Time, we featured the fabulous Eddie McClintock, who's an actor from the series Warehouse 13, which I still keep pushing. Hopefully you might have heard of it. It lasted for about 5 seasons a wee while ago. And of course, we have probably one of the last remaining legends of the TV production and writing field, who's still writing now in his 80s. That's Kenneth Johnson, creator, of course, of The Bionic Woman and The Incredible Hulk, V, and many more, including Alien Nation and various other sort of factors. So interesting in terms of that way. Do you feel as though things are getting easier with the multiplicity of things that we've got today? Or do you feel that sometimes, you know, when you take those steps back, I mean, we've got the podcasts, we've got the blogs, we've got the social media, we've got the TikTok videos. There are so many things for young artists like Chloe and new writers, inexperienced writers, to actually get involved with. Is it sometimes a classic case of the Buddhist line that where there is choice, there is misery?
I think that since the pandemic happened, I can't speak for every publicist or social media person out there. I'd like to get Amy's talk on this as well, but I have found that since the pandemic happened, we have been busier because media content, they're looking for content and they're looking at it from a wide general sense. With the clients that Creative Edge has, it's very, very extremely diversified because we have such a large number of clients. And so every type of genre, including nonfiction, is represented. And then you throw in the musician aspect, and you throw in the film and the acting aspect. And anytime I send out a client list to a media outlet, and you know this, Alex, you've seen it. Anytime I send out a client list to a media outlet, they are blown away because we have such a wide variety of diversified people that we represent. So it's a lot easier to get content. It's going to be very, very interesting now that the pandemic is slowing down to see what that's going to affect like, because as I said, we were actually busier during it than we were beforehand. So that's my take. I'd like to get Amy's take on this as well, because she's got a big following too. So.
Absolutely. Amy, share with us your own notions in terms of obviously the social side of things.
Yeah, so I mean, when the pandemic happened, people were kind of looking for an escape. So, you know, TikTok became really big, from a social media aspect and stuff. And so on the social media side, I kind of find it to be oversaturated and much harder for authors and things like that to get seen, because there's just so many different avenues to be on. So they have the overwhelm of what platform should I be on? How do I stay relevant? Do I need to do all these like trending dances and things like that to stay relevant? What, you know, does book talk really work for all genres or just certain ones? So I think from a social media aspect, it's become more difficult on being seen and doing things like that. From a media aspect, I agree with Mickey, like they need content. And so they're reaching out, and a well diverse realm is much easier, but in terms of an author being seen on their own, it's much more difficult.
I mean, yeah. we'll throw some of the talent: Robert J. Sawyer, Tosca Lee, Stephanie Levine, Melissa Yee, Jen Nash, Mark Leslie, Craig DeLuie, K.E.J. Howe, Jeffrey Carver, Anne Charles, Paul Byrne, Bruce Olive Solheim, Christina Rienzi, Christine Krause, of course, Natasha Dean, V.S. Holmes, H.M. Gooden. I'm just basically making sure that they all get name checks basically here, Mickey. So we're just sort of working our way through that.
But we'll have an hour then.
Exactly. There is so many to actually work through. But I am intrigued. I mean, we go to obviously Bruce, who actually recommended somebody to us who we featured this week, etc., who's a Chinese translator, and I think those networking actually opportunities that are actually there are really quite important and actually sort of help the artists. I love your definition of you see the business and you see the industry as basically building bricks, and those bricks can be different sizes and they can connect in all sorts of ways, but you tend to have this magical touch at Creative Edge of being able to ensure that you don't put people in when they're out of their depth. You know the two edges of the two coin, that basically of the coin in essence. You know that when folk are new to the whole industry, they need to effectively sort of be guided through a little bit. And even if they're seasoned pros, they could possibly be jaundiced, and then maybe they need to refresh the whole sort of experience themselves.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in building blocks, and I believe that any author, no matter how accoladed or how reputationally big they are, commercially viable, I guess is a better word, I still think that they should be leveraging the smaller opportunities and leading into the medium and large scale opportunities. But those opportunities have to be author and book focused. I've said this before in interviews where people get excited about being on mainstream television, Good Morning America, The Today Show, things like that. And then they go on these shows, and yet their book sales don't blow up. They don't explode because they're on a nationally televised or internationally televised show. They're thinking that these books should blow up, and it doesn't happen. Well, the reason it doesn't happen, and I've said this before, it's because those shows are fantastic for coverage from a general sense, but they're not going to attract readers because the readers don't watch the Today Show to hear about authors. People watch the Today Show because it's an international show with a widespread reputation, but it's not really geared to authors selling books. So what we do is we tend to focus on smaller outlets that actually attract readers and attract other writers and attract people within the book community. And we found that those kind of outlets are actually been more successful from that aspect. And I'm not trying to slam the Today Show with this. I'm just saying that that's something that typically does happen. So if that makes any sense.
I think it does work. And Amy, from the perspective of social media, I mean, again, TikTok has had a bit of a mixed reputation. I mean, if you were really cynical, you'd say the only reason it blew up was because the Chinese invented the coronavirus so they could promote TikTok. I'm kidding, obviously. That's not what happened. But is this something where, again, you're looking for the next thing? Because I'm amazed at how Meta, now it's transformed from Facebook and Instagram, et cetera, is still going, because those of us, and you're probably too young to remember, Mickey might just remember MySpace and Bebo and some of those early kind of attempts at social media, etc. And effectively, nobody talks about them now. I mean, I think they're probably still about out there. Social media has this sort of notion of constantly changing. I mean, Chloe's a big social media user, but how does that connect?
Well, I mean, the whole premise behind social media. Like, I remember MySpace, you could add music to your profile. Wow. I remember, like, I was totally down. I loved
you
my could,
you Canadians must be looking at some sort of whole youthful thing, basically.
I remember it. But, you know, social media was meant to be social and bring people together. And I think that that's why it's so appealing. And I know now with social media marketing and stuff, it's built into everyone's business plan. And being an author, you are a business owner, right? And it's built into that because now you have to do that to get any kind of traction because everybody is on it. And it's so saturated that you have to be creating content constantly, like every day, every other day, multiple times a day, you know. And I think when TikTok came out, it was something different. And it was kind of like, you know, I always say a lot of us have the attention span of a child, which is kind of how TikTok functions. You know, they're short video clips, you know, and things like that. So it's like to the point, all right, I'm out, it's entertaining. And so when you throw something like that in the mix and it's like, oh man, okay, so now what do I need to do? How can I get seen on that? And then when Book Talk came around and people were doing open box reviews and unboxing videos and really helping authors, that became appealing. And so it's just trying to stay on top of that can get so overwhelming, but you have to view social media like you were saying, right? Like Meta, a whole lot of people don't talk about, they're still on it though. And Instagram, it's one of those things where it's like a fashion wheel. Things come and go out of style all the time. And it's kind of the same with social media platforms. So what's working really well on TikTok right now, you never know. In a year or two, Instagram could be the next latest thing, or there could be another one. Because I don't know if any one of you guys are still on Clubhouse, that had like a short little trend, right? And so it's always just trying to stay relevant. But that's where the overwhelm comes, because everyone, you have a different audience on all social media platforms. And so making that connection is difficult.
Which is why we'd say it's abundantly social, obviously, from that point of view, the abundance of social. It's great stuff. Chloe, we haven't even mentioned Twitter, of course, the wonderful thing, much beloved of a former president of the United States. What are your own thoughts on this particular sort of era of social media? And how, I mean, you've got a new single coming out in a few days' time. So in terms of promoting that, how are you going? What sort of strategies are you putting in place?
Well, this is where Amy might come into it, because I might want to ask for advice on that, because I mean, at the moment, it's kind of like press photos, trying to put bits of lyrics out, me talking to camera on like Instagram story. I've been putting some cover songs out there as well. I just did Running Up That Hill because I love that song and I love Kate Bush. And because it's in at the moment, I thought I'll put a cover on of that.
And you love Stranger Things.
And I love Stranger Things, yeah. And yeah, it's just trying to keep the content like new and exciting all the time. So I'm trying to think what new stuff can I keep putting out there to sort of create an audience and get people interested in it. So yeah, I just thought I'd ask to Amy and Mickey, kind of what is it that you're looking for, say, in an author to take on as such? What is it that they have that you think, right, oh, let's take on this author? You know, I'm just intrigued about what you look for.
You want to go first, Amy, or do you want to go?
I can, yeah. So from like a social media aspect, it's going to be, I'm not so much worried about their following numbers. I'm worried about how consistent they are in the content and what they're posting, right? So are you posting every day? Are you posting every other day consistently? Are you engaging with your readers and getting engagement and commenting when they comment, right? But then from that, you know, from a social media marketing point of view, it ultimately comes down to that and their book cover. Is their book cover going to be appealing enough that I can put it on social media and it's going to be striking enough to get attention? So from like a marketing standpoint, that's what I look for. So
yeah.
Mickey.
For myself, it's a little bit different because I'm always putting my team ahead of everything else.
Yeah.
And so when I'm talking with authors, initially, I usually have an hour conversation with them. And that conversation is really geared to determine whether they're not only going to be a fit with me personality wise, but are they going to be able to be a fit within my 100 plus team and be able to work with them and leverage them and be part of that. The other part is what Amy talked about. If they don't have a vibrant book cover, or if their headshot looks like a selfie, or if they don't have a website, I'll be honest, I'm not really interested, because these are all things that need to happen to be successful as an author, an artist, a writer, or whatever. And if they can't take the time to get a proper website up or go and get professional headshots done, it's not marketable. So why would I spend my energy and my time bringing on somebody who doesn't even want to do that? So if that makes any sense at all, I hope that answers the question.
I found it interesting. You know, I just wanted to know what you guys look for. And it's very interesting.
It's not even about the book and the story of the book. I'm only worried if the book is properly formatted. I'll likely not even ever read the book because I don't like to give prep. I don't, Alex. I don't read my clients' books because I don't want to be, if it's a bad story, then I don't want to market that story. And if it's a stellar story, then I'm going to want to put that story above everybody else. So I just take the fifth and I don't read the books just based on that.
So that's,
but you give me a Batman comic, I'm all over that. Give me in a heartbeat.
we come on to the graphic narratives in a few moments. Amy, I just want to turn back to yourself, of course. We've talked about you being the owner of Abundantly Social. Are you based in Houston, Texas? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm an hour north, so I'm in Bryan College Station. So if you know, like, if you've ever heard of Texas A&M University, I live in that city.
Okay, so. You also host the Through the Eyes of Author program. Obviously, we talked about Abundantly Social. I mean, I'm quite interested. I mean, I don't know how public do we want to go with the media panel that we're coordinating on August the 16th? I mean, shall we leak a bit of news about that now, or tease ahead, or is that a case of...
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, you are more than welcome. I'm super excited about it because I know a lot of the authors that I work with, all of their questions.
And we've met each other now, Amy, so that's great.
I know. I'm BFFs with everyone that I meet. So we're now best friends. Okay. But I mean, that's the number one thing that I hear, you know, and I've been working with authors for a really long time, is what is media looking for? How can I get media attention? You know, how can I stand out against everyone else that's submitting to have an interview or whatever? And so I'm excited that, you know, me and Mickey teamed up to find speakers for the group that I do. And so when Mickey was like, we can create a media panel, Amy, I'm like, yes, oh my gosh, this would be perfect. So everyone's super excited about it. It's open to whoever wants to come and get media input and what they're looking for. And I can't wait. I'm super excited about it. So I know that that's happening in August, I believe, if I remember.
The 15th of August, right? I believe.
Yes, which is also my dad's birthday, so it's a really good day. Oh. So I'm just excited, and I'm so grateful that I met Mickey almost a year ago. We're coming up on a year, so it's been a fun ride. So
vice versa. I could not imagine having a better partner for Top Shelf than her, to be honest.
Oh.
Well, thank you. And in fact, it's the 16th. So just in case if you went in on the 15th, you'd be a day early. It's actually August the 16th we have done here. This is what comes of being over in Europe, you see. Times change in all sorts of ways from that point of view.
I know. I found it difficult to juggle just, you know, US time zones. You throw Europe and stuff in there, I'm a fish out of water for that one. So yes.
That's such a good... Mickey, you're still presumably in Canada. Is that right?
Yes, I am still in Canada.
Good. That's what we like to hear from that point of view, north of the Maple Line. You've taken a big decision, of course, recently, because you're gradually deciding to part with your paper editions of comic magazines and graphic narratives. Is that because they're all available online these days?
I have everything that I've got from a reader's standpoint in digital format. And I was actually telling Amy this yesterday. I'm a big completist. And so... when you factor in the prices of some of these things, like if I want a full set of Batman, I'm going to need about $4 million. If I want a full set of Uncanny X-Men, I'm going to need at least probably between $100,000 and $500,000 to do that. And so the fact that I have all the stories already, it just makes sense to sell off the paper copies because I'm never going to be able to get them complete unless I win a lotto or we build an empire. So, I mean, that's what needs to happen.
Or both,
right? So I'm going to focus my energies on other areas, music, things like that, and enjoy my digital stuff.
And you do have a complete set of Beatles albums, which brings us back to Paul McCartney. And my question for you,
I do.
Which Beatles number would you like us to feature now?
My favorite song is Day Tripper of all time by the Beatles. I love that song. I listen to that song every single day. Just know that. So, Chloe, if you ever do a version of Day Tripper, I want the EP because I will buy it from you. And I'll pay handsomely for it.
I'll think about that then, definitely. Thank you.
Beatles and Day Tripper. We've got two fabulous individuals for this particular feature. Amy, of course, Ravichandrian, who's the owner of Abundantly Social, based in Texas, well, north of Texas, and Mickey Mickelson, of course, publicist extraordinaire, Creative Edge, and so on. We changed the format, partly due to the pandemic, a little bit of our Author of the Week things, to kind of give us a little bit more time to breathe with the author and give the author a bit more time to breathe in the interview. So we kind of went from what used to be pre-pandemic, as you may recall, Mickey, on the Wednesday midweek drive shows, 10 or 15 minute slots. We kind of expanded that to what we have now, sort of 30, 34, 35 minute sort of segments from that. Is that useful for yourself? Is that useful for the author? Is it, because obviously it means we can reflect on them in a slightly more rounded way rather than just focusing just on promoting their particular product?
I think it's a double-edged sword because some people say shorter is better because of the time span aspect. But the other thing with that is longer, in my opinion, is a little bit longer because then the author can actually delve deep into talking more about their story, the rationale behind the book, dwell more into the characters, and effectively, you know, talk more about their books. You look at someone like Tosca Lee, who's got multiple books. If she can only talk about the one book, it's maybe a 15-minute interview, but because it's a longer time, she could talk about everything that's involved with those books. The fact that she has film options for them and the fact that she's writing other things and talking about the award wins that she's getting and stuff. So I like the longer format myself. And I know with Amy's show, Author Talk, it is a longer show as well. So, yeah.
it's all part and parcel of the rich tapestry of life and the fact that time is an illusion at the best of times, so to speak.
Absolutely. And besides, Alex, you're such a great host. Who wouldn't want to spend a half an hour talking with you? Really, to be honest.
Yes. Oh, Mickey, you're such a sweet talker. You know, this is one of the reasons why I pretty much responded to your very kind invitation to join the media panel pretty much immediately. Aww. to connect with that. So that's all good. Chloe, you're a keen Stranger Things fan. You're a keen Marvel Universe fan. Mickey,
absolutely.
Identified is key for that. We're not sure about Amy, where she sits in the wealth of fantasy that's actually out there. But let's find out. I mean, Amy, are you a particular fan of the DC and Marvel empires, or is it a case of no graphic narratives? Just leave them alone.
No, so I'm probably going to get hate from Mickey on this, but I love Marvel. I have a thing for Thor and Doctor Strange. They are my people. I love them. So me and Mickey don't talk a whole lot about it because I'm more of a Marvel person. But I mean, I love, there's like Wonder Woman of DC I love, but I don't know. Doctor Strange mostly is just, it's my person. So
DC all the way, always DC.
Marvel for me.
No. Always go for the bat. The bat. Always the bat.
Okay. Extraordinary. surely in the words of Robin Pierce, our Starburst magazine writer and so on, there's got to be room for all sorts in the whole thing. I mean, if you want to have a scary thing that actually really could unite Marvel and DC, as I said before, there's a scary individual that would actually sort of unite anybody in terms of global villainy and various other factors. In fact, you know, I just can't take it anymore. Let's go back to a much more calming sort of image on the whole sort of sequence there.
There you go.
In case you were wondering, Amy, that was a former, well, actually, he still is actually Prime Minister of Britain, but he apparently is going. So that's all good. Probably to meet up with Donald and sort of plan another sort of royal domination thing. But let's not go there. Mickey, in terms of advice for people who are listening to this and are, again, faced with a battery of choice when it comes to potential publicists, finding a degree of fit and so on, what would your key top tips be?
For people looking for a publicist, yeah. I would say do your homework and understand that you have to be ready to look for a publicist because there's a lot of publicists out there. That, and this could be a negative comment, and I'll probably get some hate mail over it, but all they care about is the money aspect. That's all they're looking for. That's why they charge exorbitant fees up front. That's why they tell you you're going to get on Fox News and NBC and all these places, but it's going to cost you $10,000 to do that. So I'm not like that, which is why I'm popular, I think, but I think it's important that authors do their homework and ask tough questions. Get testimonials, find out what their track record is, find out what they're looking to do from a platform standpoint, and have deep conversations and not have to pay to have those deep conversations. Because lots of publicists will pay for 1-hour consultations and charge you to have those conversations. And you should never have to. Information should be free in that aspect. So.
I'm struck partly because there is similarity within the music industry. I mean, Chloe, is that something, again, because I know we thought we found the ideal agent for yourself. Sadly, he's retired decided to sort of step aside to a certain extent. But what are your own sort of thoughts and experiences from that point of view, as indeed you continue to map out your own career between teaching and obviously musical work?
Yeah, it is. It's hard, isn't it, to try and find the right fit, and a publisher is somebody that I am looking for at the moment. I got an email from a publisher, but they were, like you were saying, they was asking for quite a lot, and then I was sort of worried. I thought, are they legit? Because these are the things you worry about at the same time. And he was promising this, that, and the other, and I think it is a scary thing because sometimes you think, are you putting yourself out there, and are they dragons in the den, or you know, the wolves in the fire, or whatever. You've got to be so careful, haven't you? But I mean, yourself, Mickey, sound, and what you and Amy are doing sounds absolutely brilliant. So,
thanks.
You know, good for you.
Amy, anything to add in terms of that? I mean, is the T word vital at the end of the day? That if you don't get that, if you get a bad gut feeling about the whole system, step away from the deal or potential deal.
Yeah, I'm a huge advocate of. Your intuition will tell you. And you know, I stand with Mickey. I mean, people shouldn't charge you to have a meet and greet to kind of see if it's a good fit. Personalities do matter. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, whether you're looking for a publicist, wanting to get published, whatever, you know, you really have to do your homework, because it is a market that people can get overshadowed really quickly. And so you really have to kind of dig deep and find what fits best for you, your budget, and everything kind of like that.
Yep.
Thank you.
Fascinating, insofar as we could also bring in Liz Brewer, of course, who looks after Dame Shirley Bassey, and of course also until relatively recently was the publicist for Ivana Trump, but that's moved on. Ivana effectively, who was so precise on a whole routine that she once actually invoiced a publicist for some stamps, which is nice, you know, so that's all good. What are the receipts for stamps that were put out there? I'm not sure how many stamps there were, but there were stamps there, whatever. Nikki, best way to actually get in touch, presumably with respect to Creative Edge, would I suspect be via the Creative Edge website. Is that right?
That is correct. Everything is there. Contact form, links, testimonials, and all of my authors are fully represented there, so you can see who I work with.
creative-edge.services will actually take you through as far as that's actually concerned. And in terms of Top Shelf and social media, Amy, how can people actually connect with that?
Yeah, so Top Shelf is, the last time I checked, it's topshelf.com. I'm pretty sure it still is working, Mickey. And then for social media and stuff, you can always just go to abundantlysocial.com. There's a contact form there. My email's there. You can always just find me on social media channels. I'm a really open book. So in a way, you just type in my name if you can spell my last name, and I will.
What's wrong with Ravi Chandrian? Ravichandrian?
Yeah, you are the only person that has said my last name correct. So
it's true. I got it wrong.
Because you were the only one. So thank you so much. I truly appreciate it.
That's okay, Amy. You're more than welcome. And so with a surname called Leftuke, who knows where we can go with that? But that's a different line entirely. And Chloe, getting in touch with your good self, relatively straightforward. What's the best way?
Yes, so on Facebook, it's Chloe Rose, C-H-L-O-E-Y Rose. I'm on Instagram. Anybody message me through them. I'm ever so nice, and I'll always have a chat to anybody. And you can find me on there.
I think we need to work on the Canadian and Texas tour for you, Chloe. I'm saying Texas because obviously it's a much bigger state than York. It's, in fact, it's often said that Yorkshire is the Texas of the UK, which is ironic because obviously that's another line entirely. Nikki, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Yes, it was amazing. Thank you so much.
We kind of did a half year review after embedding into all sorts of journeys into the social work, etc. And Amy, how have you found your debut?
No, this was so much fun. Thank you for allowing me to be on. You guys are amazing. So thank you.
Absolutely delightful. Chloe will be back with you shortly for our Resonance Rewind production, which, as I say, will be featuring hopefully Armin Shimerman, amongst others. What is the Chloe Rose number you'd like us to go out with so that Mickey and Amy and the listeners could actually have a general flavour of Chloe Rose in song?
Oh, Hopes and Dreams.
Makes sense, because that could almost be the joy of a subtext for Creative Edge, Hopes and Dreams. Mickey, I presume you will return in the not too distant future.
Of course I will, and thank you again for your support, my friend.
Absolutely delightful, and no problem whatsoever. And Amy, we'll look to have you back as well before too long, probably, I'll say, around about August the 16th.
I know, yes, I'm super excited about it. Thanks for letting me be on.
By
So, is there such a thing as a free lunch? Well, maybe not a free lunch, but certainly freebies could be one answer to the cost of living crisis. And to actually address this, we're delighted to welcome celebrity MasterChef winner and indeed TV presenter extraordinaire for The One Show, The Martin Lewis Money Show, and much more. It's Angelica Bell. How are you, Angelica?
I'm great, Alex. Thanks for having me.
It was great to connect with your good self. And this particular finding, of course, from Gumtree, that suggests that over half of individuals are now experiencing regular anxiety when making any purchases. So clearly that is a challenge probably brought about by the inevitable cost of living crisis that we're suffering.
No, exactly. I mean, you know, we're all trying to get through managing bills, food, shopping, you know, just staying financially stable. I know lots of businesses are, you know, really struggling. And you know, it's stressful. So when we have to think about buying something new, that is going to only add to that. And because of that, you know, a quarter of us are now trying to source items for free, which is inevitable. And I think what Gumtree are trying to do, it's this new something for nothing economy, but trying to get the stigma away from freeness. Because, you know, like in the past, sometimes people, you know, you get some things for free, you haven't got any money, but it's not about that. It's looking at waste. We're much more sustainably focused. So enjoying the fact that freebie hunting is preventing waste. It's also thinking about shifting attitudes, like we say. You know, we're proud when, you know, we would get something for free and it's amazing and we can use it. And also allowing us to be creative as people. So if you find things that for free that someone else doesn't want, take it. You might need it, you could paint it, make it your own, you know, decorate it. So there's lots of different aspects to this and why I think it's amazing and a way that we can still get what we want without having to, you know, in a way deprive ourselves but not pay a penny.
There is, of course, the classic line that one person's trash is another person's golden treasure, which I suppose is true. But there are often times where people do feel, as you rightly said, Angelica, that I don't know if it's free. There must be a catch. There must be issues within that. We're so programmed to actually avoid the notion that if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. But maybe we do need to look around more and look at what things could be usefully adopted for a different person.
No, exactly. And I know what you mean, that one person's trash. But I think in this case, if you look at the stats, it says that there's about £4 billion worth of items in British households that we all would happily part with for nothing. So sometimes it's not even trash. Sometimes it's just something lying around. I suppose everyone listening now, if they were to look around their houses and they'd see things and be like, actually, I don't need that. But it's in good condition, but someone else could use it, you know. And that's what it's about. It's reusing, and that it's that cycle of economy, isn't it, where we don't necessarily have to buy something new, but someone else has got something just as good that we could use. And I think, yes, it is about changing and shifting that attitude and get more people involved in the movement, and so that they don't feel that there is the stigma, but in fact show off and say, look, I've got, it's a win, I didn't have to pay anything for it.
The importance of upcycling in the 21st century, a whole new strand is to be adopted. Now, clearly, you've also teamed up with Gumtree, Angelica, to launch this new pop-up, which actually brings a freebie section to life for Gumtree from July 30th onwards, really.
That's right. Now, Gumtree, obviously, they have a freebie section on their website that anyone can look at. People can pick up items completely free of charge, which is local to you. But we're also having this pop up tomorrow on Saturday. So if you're in near Shoreditch High Street in London, and if you know people who, you know, you might not be there, but you might know people in that area or who could pop along, we are going to be having this pop up. I'm going to be there in the afternoon, just chatting to people. They can browse, take something away without having to put their hand in their purse, which is going to be amazing, and just teaching people about this, you know, re-commerce, circular economy, and so that people can get more information on it and see where they can get those items that they need, especially if they're feeling the pinch.
You're too young to remember a program called Multicoloured Swap Shop, but it is one of those areas where it's intriguing that more and more people would like to see swap shops, freebie sites, circular economy initiatives becoming more mainstream. That probably suggests that actually the time is right to start realizing that we are one society, that we can actually share and swap things effectively.
No, exactly. I think, you know, it's really weird. You go through cycles of life, or, you know, in history, where certain times of crisis where people pull together. And I think you never think it's going to happen in your lifetime, but I think we are in this era where and time where actually people have realized that pulling together is more effective than pulling apart. And if people need help, say it. If you need something, say it. Get on those WhatsApp groups with the community or your road. And if you want to get rid of something, put it on there and say, hey, you know, I'm getting rid of this. Does anyone want it? And don't be afraid to say, actually, I do. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
From a personal point of view, Angelica, has there ever been a moment where you sort of thought, oh, I could really do with that particular cooking utensil? It'll help me inevitably win Celebrity MasterChef.
Listen, there's been times, you know, I know I'm on TV where work has been a bit tight. And I remember once when we were moving, we were like, we need some side tables. Got some free. I went to the tip. I was just bringing some things to the tip. And they have this little section, which I think is also great, where I'm based, where people put things that they don't want to throw away that are still good, but people can pick up. And I picked up two side tables, Michael and I. We took them back, painted, got some chalk paint, painted them up. And we've still got them now. And I also found another sign, an old London Underground sign as well. And I just think, oh, it's brilliant. It's up on the wall. And I just think, and it makes me feel good. I'm like, that's somebody didn't want that. And now I've got it. And now I've got these side tables, which I'll always keep because it's a reminder that, you know, whatever at that time that I got those things and I made them work for my home. It's, you know, and I don't mind that. I've always been, though, I think somebody who wants to save and values things and likes to reuse things. I've still got things that I wore on CBBC many moons ago that I've still got now that I wear. And I know some people might think that's a bit strange. Luckily, I'm still fit into it. I will say, I put my hands up and say, yes, that is amazing. But I just like the fact that I'm still reusing it.
It demonstrates that thriftiness can be a virtue, Angelica, which is a positive thing to look at. Astounding to find that there are an estimated £4 billion worth of items around the UK that we'd all happily part with for free. That's a significant chunk of the economy.
Huge. Chunk. I mean, it is insane when you think about it like that. I mean, before, just during COVID, I did do a massive clear out and I did find things that I was like, whoa. And I gave some stuff to my neighbours. Actually, during COVID, and you know, all of us would be switching things around on our street and stuff. But that's a lot of money in terms of items, which is approximately £100 worth each. So, you know, let's get on that page. Let's get on that Gumtree page and sort it out.
Which brings us neatly round to the penultimate question, of course. Where can people actually locate more details about the Gumtree survey? Is it as easy as literally as typing in Gumtree to your search engine and going from thence?
Yeah, gumtree.com and then /freebies. And you can go to the site, see what's there and get lots more information.
It's been a delight as ever, Angelica. So we'll wrap up with the two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the Midweek Drive today?
Have I? Sorry, what was that question?
Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today? It's a term we tend to use as a sort of way in which these days we've replaced the telephone link with a Zoomer. So has it been good for you?
It's been excellent. I've had a fantastic Zoomer today.
Well, critical customer satisfaction question, you see. So can we prevail upon you to return? Will you come back sometime?
Of course, if you invite me, and I'll be there.
Angelica Bell, thrifty TV presenter extraordinaire. Keep on keeping on and have a great day.
Same to you. Thank you so much for having me.
and I know what you're wishing for.